Oh, it's Friday, November 7th. That means on a Friday, we're going to clean the ice. Time for a little Samboni to come on through. Sam Batesh, it is always good to see you, brother. We're double dipping this week. You joined Larry and I for a big trade deadline spectacular.
Now, here's the best part. He
didn't do much.
I heard you guys, though, went another. So I have to. So let's paint the picture here. 9:30 Pacific time, we started that thing. And from what I understand, I had to hop an hour into it, but apparently you and Larry went until 1:30.
Yeah, we basically talked to the deadline, just waiting to see if something.
Very impressive. That is very, not a little bit, but very impressive.
Is it impressive, or is it honestly a little concerning?
Potentially, I'm sure Jillian has an opinion on this, and that would definitely be of the latter, but I'm going to say impressive, and I'm sure that the audience very much appreciated that, because it's a day where once you get into the algorithm and you are the voice of that, once the stories actually start rolling in, that's the first thing to push. And so congrats to you two. That was great. Look, I was happy to be a small part of it.
We brought in a big audience that day, and a lot of people think all for naught. And Sam, obviously, we got the game of the year coming up here. It really is. How the West will be won, what happens on Sunday will go a very, very long way to determining that. The 49ers are looking for a sweep over the red hot Rams with Mac Jones going once again. Doesn't seem like Pearsall is going to be out there. It's got to be 85 touches for Christian McCaffrey. We know the formula. They threw the ball to Kendrick Bourne like his name was Jerry Rice down in L.A. back in, week four? It's
unbelievable. Yes, that game, that Thursday nighter was wow. Kendrick Bourne will never again. I mean, that is just hanging on the wall. That jersey, send it to the Hall of Fame. And in his house, that's the one that hangs behind him from that game. That game worn jersey. I hope he didn't give it away after that one.
Are they going to try to force feed him again? Are they going to try to get Kittle more involved in this passing game? Are we going to see more from, I don't know, any of this rookie class that, you know, a few names were drafted on offense? We haven't really seen them yet. Jordan Watkins, will we see you? What's going on with Brian Robinson? What kind of Rams team are we going to get? A very interesting, Sammy, wrinkle that they rolled out when they were in London, and maybe you can say, hey, it's overseas. We'll talk about all of that. But again, it's really good to see everybody here. Please hit like and subscribe.
Yes.
Before you hit like and subscribe on Damon Bruce Plus, do it over on Thinking Out Loud with my friend, Andrew Siciliano, and Sam. We're due for another Siciliano hit here. I think you're right about that. In like a month or so.
Absolutely.
But it's great to have you here. And let me just tell everybody, this guy right here. Has got a sandwich waiting for you. It's almost lunchtime here on the East or on the West Coast. We're getting closer to noon, and hopefully there's an Ike's around you. Check out Ike's. Get yourself a sandwich from Ike's. You'll be happy that you did. Sign up for that Love Rewards program. You get a free sandwich when you sign up. You start earning your way to free chips and free drinks and all good stuff like that. I'm going to hit you with a little Dubliner right there. I'm going to hit you with a Dubliner West Portal right here. It's a walking billboard for our friends Kenny and John. Get to the Dubliner West Portal. Where are you watching this Rams game this Sunday? Where are you watching the Warriors in action? Where are you going to be watching? What else is happening? Oh, Indiana.
Yeah.
Take on Penn State this week.
Yeah.
Come on, dude. We're going to be.
Yeah, by the way, USC tonight. You got some college football tonight as well. USC, granted, Northwestern, but, always interesting. I like a good Friday night college football matchup.
Go Northwestern. Let's just chaos. Give me chaos everywhere you got it. So thank you so very, very much. And again, you want to make a play on a certain game or two? Ooh. Well, check out our good friends at Sleeper, the world's fastest fantasy growing site. You will find out why. The interface is fantastic. I'm going to be concocting a little parlay for the 49er Rams game on Sunday. We will let you know what we're doing before that game even kicks off when that Sunday live stream begins. So thanks very much to Sleeper. And again, please click on the link. It is very top of the description of this live stream. Use promo code Damon when you sign up, and you get a $100 match up to your first $100. So I asked this of Larry when we spoke earlier today on Wake Up. Sam, I'm going to ask you as well. What do you think of the 49ers standing on business and not doing anything at the deadline beyond the additions of Keon White and Brian Robinson, which happened weeks ago? These weren't deadline deals, but they did make two trades, but not on the day of the deadline. Do you have any decision remorse or endorsement about that? How do you feel about that?
So you could argue that the person that makes the trade at the deadline is a procrastinator, right? The teams that waited too long are ultimately making these deals by the seat of their pants up until that 4 o'clock Eastern deadline. And maybe that feels a little like cramming for the test. And so the Niners and the Keon White are doing this ahead of time. Howie Roseman did a lot of what he did over the weekend beforehand. So the Packers, what are you going to tell me? The Packers didn't do anything at the trade deadline. They have Micah Parsons and they didn't have him in the offseason, right? So there are moves that happen ahead of this. And I remember seasons. I remember what I thought Chase Young was going to bring to this team. Trade deadline, the biggest news that I saw in the NFC over the last few years, I mean, obviously Christian McCaffrey, but then the next year, I thought Chase Young was the key to a Super Bowl victory. And granted, Chase Young did play well in that game, and Chase Young could have been the difference had they won that game in overtime, but I've seen the Niners be aggressive, and I've seen the Niners stay put. There's part of me, there is a quiet confidence about staying put when it doesn't feel like a panic move. Wouldn't you say that the Cowboys felt like a panic with the moves that they have and certainly where their season's been headed? I thought what the Cowboys did on trade deadline day felt desperate. Whereas the Niners, I felt like there must be confidence inside the building and there's a little bit of, are we getting healthy? We understand, of course, Fred Warner and Nick Bosa, they're not getting healthy for this season. But the Purdy Mac Jones thing is sort of a in our back pocket. We're going to have a different quarterback. We've got another option at quarterback should the Mac Jones magic run out at any point. So I do like the idea that you've got somebody in the wings already. This team is going to have a different personality with Brock Purdy at the helm. And so perhaps you're thinking that we actually have an upgrade at the most important position on the horizon. Let's not panic about all these other smaller pieces because the most important one's about to be in place.
The way I, you know, once I slept on it, I wasn't angry in real time, but I thought a little bit more based on the results so far in this season, do it for them. But the Niners stood on business of doing nothing. And then I think maybe have a little, we judged the market correctly because it's not like Bradley Chubb ended up on another team. It's not like Arden Key was, oh, he went for a fifth anyways. And you could have tossed the, you know, you could have flipped the keys to the golf cart to the Titans for a player like Arden Key. And sure, that is sort of where I look at this whole thing.
And you and I liked Cam Jordan. You and I spoke about Cam Jordan. Cam Jordan's still wearing the black and gold. You know,
he wants to go down with the ship in New Orleans and, you know, 15 year career Saint. I get it. Okay. You know, Cam Jordan probably does better at his card signing show by being a career Saint than hopping on the Niners for a very last slice of playoff pie at the very end of his career. So I don't begrudge him that. And I honestly don't begrudge the patience that the 49ers showed. It's not inspiring. It's not inspiring.
It's not exciting. I want to say this. It's just not exciting. And a lot of times things that the fans think are exciting or that you and I are going to get excited about, sometimes they don't work out. I mean, look, there are plenty of players that make a difference. I mean, obviously you can't say McCaffrey made a massive difference, but was that available?
There you go, Sammy. You beat me to the point that I was about to make. I don't think you trade for depth. I don't think you trade for rank and file. You trade for difference makers. Arden Key, as much as I liked him, as much as he's been successful, as obtainable as that felt, as doable as that deal felt, the track record of he played his best ball with the Niners already, bring him back, come home again, that sort of thing. I think it was the right thing to do to not add Arden Key, because you know what you got? You got a team full of Arden Keys already. And isn't that the problem? You got a whole bunch of guys who are just there. They're there. Of anyone who's there conceptually can make a play in any one given play, but these are not game wreckers. These are not guys that you're planning around. These are not guys who are keeping defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators up at night. You got a team full of Arden Keys. You don't need another. So
think about new faces on the Niners this season. I mean, look, Bryce Huff, Sky Moore, Brian Robinson. Those are, you know, like there are, those are additions that, you know, I will throw into the cake mix here when we're talking about additions before the trade deadline, right? I mean, before, basically you can make moves before 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Now, some teams wait and then make something happen then, and other teams are a little more calculated, patient, et cetera. The part of the equation we're not addressing is Bosa and Warner, should that have changed the math?
Of course it would have. I think you approach things much differently with the two best players on your football team still intact and a record that says you're an eyelash away from first place as it is. Yeah, I do think you are more willing to extend yourself for a deal that doesn't make sense in that moment where a little austerity and the right decision and slow playing. I look at it like this way, Sammy. The Niners are playing a hand of poker. But unlike Texas Hold'em, this is a 17-card hand. You got your hold cards, and you're looking at them. Those are all the games that you're going to play. You got all these cards that are still going to come out on the flop and the river and all that stuff. As the Niners are looking at all this, what bothered me the most is some fans are saying they've given up on the year. No, they haven't. They have not given up on the year, but they're not going to re-raise the pot as they play this poker hand out. And I think that's probably the best way to play the hand. I know that's not exciting. I know that's not sexy. I know that doesn't beat the chest with confidence. You're going to be Super Bowl champions. I think it's the right thing to do.
And guess what? Okay, here's the good news. Nobody wins the Super Bowl on a bluff. Cards are on the table.
Right.
You've either got the cards or you don't. That's it. You're not going to bluff your way into this. You can't. No one walks away. Oh, we don't even know the cards. What a win. Wow, way to hold true on the pot and win and never show your cards. No. The cards come out on Super Bowl Sunday, on NFC Championship Sunday, on Divisional Saturday, on Wild Card Saturday or Monday or whatever day you end up playing that thing. But the cards are out and the games are played, and who you have on your roster makes a difference or not. It's not about, well, we almost did this or we could have done that or we think for next year, we stockpile draft picks. None of that's going to help you in those games. The Niners window is still right here. You and I know they're a significant player in the NFC. I will say before we talk about this game coming up this weekend, the Seahawks are the team that make this all a little more interesting now, because that's the team that this is a two-horse race. We're all excited about McVay and Shanahan.
You got to rebuy in here. You, even though you didn't want to, you got to stick around in this hand. There's another player at the table here. The biggest problem that the 49ers have are their own injuries and zero separation from their own division.
But guess what? Here, look. Let's look at one thing, though. Let's look at the Rams for a moment. The Niners, from a conference record, divisional record standpoint, they've got it on the Rams. They've got a head-to-head right now on the Rams. That's going to change Sunday, potentially. And they've got conference record and division record, where the Rams have lost to the Eagles, have obviously lost already to the Niners. You know, the Rams have issues in spots where they would rather not have it. You know, that win against the Colts for the Rams is not that significant when it comes down to trying to win this division on a tiebreak or get seeding within the NFC for who the conference alignment. So that's going to play a difference. The Niners have that right now. Now, this game will help tell that story. Sweep versus split, pretty big difference, but the only team that can actually sweep at the moment is the Niners. That's nice.
It is.
That's nice. Feels nice right now. Feels nice right now. Now, if I had to bet my life, I'm going to say Mac Jones doesn't sweep the Rams. I'm willing to put that card on the table right now.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to fade that sentiment. Let's see what actually happens.
Of course.
What's really interesting is styles make fights, and normally the style of the fight that Shanahan gets into is Sean McVay. Kyle walks away the winner, but we'll see what the Rams actually look like this week, because they just played their last week, unlike any other week where they've actually played, and I'm sure down at ESPN LA where you are, Sammy, they've been talking about this all week. Instead of spreading it out and throwing it around, they went straight up power, 3 tight end, 2 tight end, all game long in their last game, and did it to the point where, you know, Stafford had one of his best days in the uniform. He threw for 4 touchdowns with 5 touchdowns, whatever it was. He had a really good day. And I'm wondering what style of fight McVay is going to put into this game. Will he try to get physical against the Niners, who feel like they might be a little light, you know, lighten their pants up front? Or does he try to spread them out and play in the space? I actually think that if they try to play bully ball against the Niners, that could actually play a little bit more into the Niners' hand. Like, it's just going to be, it's going to have, like, if you're going to be a power forward on your team that's going to clog the paint, I think that actually might help me more than if you have great spacing.
Okay, let's look at what happened. Let's look at the game, the first of these two games. The Niners came out as the better team. Mac Jones surprised everybody by being the best offensive player that night. I mean, granted, Stafford ended up with more yards, but overall, Mac Jones, that was the Mac Jones, you know, flex game, right? I mean, that was a massive flex, what Mac Jones did with Kendrick Bourne. But the reason I say that is because of what it does to dictate the game plan. The Niners are playing with the lead. The Rams are playing from behind. That's going to change the math in that game, and it did significantly.
My mother-in-law's upstairs. I got to get her something.
That is amazing. I love
it. There you are.
So stay where you are. On that, and I'll catch you back up when you get here, but I'm rolling. the Rams in that game, whatever the game plan was heading in, they had to scrap much of that because the first quarter was so in favor of the Niners. Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne took that game over early. Mac Jones with a great touchdown pass to McCaffrey as well. That game simply said, all right, the Rams now have to play catch up. And in regards to bully ball, unfortunately, the Rams twice in a bully ball situation had Kyren Williams fumble at the goal line. Alfred Collins' greatest contribution this season is absolutely that game. He's the MVP of that game. And then on fourth down, McVay agrees with himself that he made the right choice to go for it on fourth down, but it's the it that he didn't like. In the end, the execution of a play where you're running Kyren Williams right into the line and into the teeth of the Niners defense, that didn't work. A stop in overtime on fourth down is the game. That is the difference. The Niners win on that play. So two bully ball plays with Kyren Williams potentially backfired on the Rams. So it tells me perhaps in a game where we all remember Kendrick Bourne and Mac Jones, if you look back that day, Stafford actually did pass for more yardage than Mac Jones. So there's a part of it. Do you go bully ball or not? People aren't going to remember it as a game where Matthew Stafford passed the ball because it's Mac Jones' best game of the season. So we remember it for that. It's Kendrick Bourne's greatest game of his career. So we remember it for that. But Damon, what I was saying is bully ball backfired on the Rams that day. Bully ball, Kyren Williams, the ball in his hand twice cost them the game.
Well, and this is McVay instantly.
He said, I made a mistake.
And that's where I think maybe the 49ers have a chance to come out ahead in the game. The Rams are the better team. The Rams are the hotter team right now. The Rams are the healthier team. But I think
McVay, they were the healthier team that Thursday, for sure.
McVay gets in his own head when he's playing Shanahan and he starts to second guess himself. And now that he's got a new style of play, I could see there just be maybe too many moving pieces in McVay's own mind. Or, I mean, they're going to come out and just play Cracker Jack and really look fantastic. No team ever really creates an awful lot of separation, no matter who's healthy, who's good, who's bad. These games are tight. Rams, Niners, tight football games. I'd be stunned to see anyone run away and hide in this one.
My prediction is overtime, Rams win. I think they win by 6, not 3, but in overtime. I say Rams win this game in overtime. It's going to be close no matter what. Again, that expression I don't love, throw the records up. But of course, what these two teams have done against each other in the McVay and Shanahan era tells you that this is going to be close. This is going to come down to the wire. It's going to come down to a mistake. That's exactly what happened in the last game. Even though the Niners had the big lead, if the Rams don't make a mistake, the Rams actually come out on top. After all that, after Kendrick Bourne 142, Mac Jones in the flex, after all of that, if Alfred Collins doesn't punch and recover that fumble from Kyren, the Rams largely have the opportunity to win that game. So it comes down to that. And you and I, when we look at schedules, Damon, what do? We say, all right, there's 17 games, but we're going to take 6 games and not even look at them one by one. We're just going to say, all right, we feel that this team's going to go 4-2, 5-1, 3-3 in the division. And when we look at the Niners and the Rams, we thought the separation was going to be in the idea that the Niners are going to get the last place teams and the Rams are going to get the first place teams. And that's where it's going to split up. But within the division, we see them both as nearly equal. And we certainly had a split for these two games. And now what we're faced with, that would tell you that the Niners won the first one and the Rams won the second one.
It's going to be a very, very interesting weekend in Santa Clara that will go a very long way to telling us what this season looks like at the end of it. And that game is happening like 4 or 5 different times in the NFL this weekend. Week 10.
Love.
Jimmy, it's a gift.
Love.
What a football weekend we have coming up in the NFL. I mean, you got your here's the game that no one probably cares an awful lot about. It is the fork in the road for both teams, which means it's almost a playoff game for the 3-5 Ravens at the 4-4 Vikings. That is not a sexy game. Unless you understand where both teams are trying to stay in the conversation. If the Ravens are going to do what you've been saying for weeks now, they're going to do, they got to win that game. If the Vikings are going to get up off the deck and stay on the lead lap at all with the Lions, and now the Chicago Bears all of a sudden got an offense, sure. The Packers are not to be taken lightly. Both of those teams are looking at must-win football this weekend, which
Lamar Jackson can't lose another game where he's favored. This season, he cannot do that. The Ravens love to give away games late, and based on the hole that they were in and based on Lamar not being healthy, based on that, any game in which Lamar Jackson is a favorite, according to Las Vegas, the Ravens have to win that game. But if they do, they win the division. And I say, and I said it 2 weeks ago, I said it even 3 weeks ago, the Ravens, as long as Lamar isn't gone the entire season, they will win that division. And I said it based on the idea that I don't believe completely in Pittsburgh for the entire season. And I, of course, do not believe in Cincinnati without Joe Burrow and what the Browns have shown, even though defensively early on they looked great. We don't believe in that either. So that tells me Ravens. The Vikings, on the other hand, are the Vikings going to be, is this going to be a special JJ McCarthy season, or is this going to be JJ McCarthy was a little dinged up yet again? We lost Carson Wentz and that's it. And sorry. And by the end of the year, maybe JJ's there and he's not. JJ McCarthy played his best game most recently from an efficiency standpoint, and we could see that. Could I see a scenario in which Minnesota wins an ugly game against Baltimore? Of course I could.
Yeah.
But
at home, of course.
Baltimore, this is a game that Baltimore, because of what they've done to themselves, has to win. And I see Baltimore as the better team with the opportunity to make a play late in this game. And I will stand by the fact that JJ McCarthy to this point hasn't proven that at the end of the game, he was the difference week one against the Bears in a sloppy, ugly, awful game that people remember as good because the last 4 minutes were good. It was a disgusting game before that. And JJ did make the best play late in that game to end up on top. But that's not going to be the case against the Ravens. The Ravens aren't going to, they're not going to, the Ravens, look, do the Ravens make mistakes in the divisional round and then the championship when they're up against the Bills and Chiefs? Yes. The Vikings are not either of those teams.
Right.
And remember this, and I know the Lions, and by the way, the Lions already beat the crap out of the Ravens this season. And you know, and I know that Lamar, what does he like to do? He likes to spank the NFC. He normally owns the NFC. And the Lions owed him a taste of their own medicine because 2 seasons ago, he destroyed the Lions. And then on Monday Night Football, the Lions said, all right, look what we can do on defense. That's the game plan. If Minnesota wants to do it, how many did they sack him 6 times? How many times did Lamar Jackson sack 6 times in a game? That was incredible. The defensive display that the Lions put on in that game.
I think the Denver Broncos just recorded another sack of Geno Smith as we were talking from that Thursday nighter. We have officially, by the way, we're talking about how great of a week 10 it's going to be. It didn't start that way thanks to Broncos and Raider rock fight that we saw last night.
Disgusting.
But prepare for all your Thursday night games to suck. We have entered that dog days of nobody's got fresh legs on a Thursday anymore. Once you hit week 10, those Thursday night games, their quality starts descending quickly.
You and I have said it, and I'll say it again. I love more football, but I want more football on Sunday, not on Thursday. That's just how I stand. Give me a 6:30 a.m. every Sunday instead of Thursday night football, and I'm signing up right now.
Absolutely. I love that. Game in London, or just make somebody on the East Coast wake up early, for goodness sakes.
Exactly.
Okay, what else we got this weekend? Again, there were a couple of...
Well, if you want, I'll jump in while you're looking at the rest of it. If you go for it, who do you got next?
I got the entire schedule in front of me here. Steelers Chargers. How about that for Sunday night football when it's all said and done? Now, the Chargers just lost Joe Alt. They're probably not going to be what they want to be, but the Steelers feel like they're crashing the party a little bit here. That game is interesting. Lions and Commanders. Again, another 1:25 Sunday game as the Rams and Niners are getting underway. Lions and Commanders. Now, Commanders are done for the year. We know that.
Although we just found out Jaden Daniels, they're going to reevaluate week 12 bye. Now, again, they got to stay afloat until then for that to matter. And he's got to actually be 100%. But that's giving a trickle of hope there. I would say largely Washington is almost in the Atlanta. We don't need to talk about him, Camp.
Oh, I would agree with you. Familiarity breeds contempt. Cardinals at Seahawks.
See, that game's going to be fascinating. And this is again, fork in the road for Arizona.
Jacoby Brissett, right?
This is fork in the road, Arizona. You're going to go all in on Jacoby. You're going to say Kyler Murray's not your quarterback. I mean, this is a big deal right here. Now, you've always got the opportunity to go back. Colts did it a ton with Anthony Richardson, right? Oh, we're moving to Flacco's here. Anthony made a mistake, whatever. And then you just go back to starting him. I mean, that can happen with Kyler Murray. But this is Jacoby saying, I've still got something, and it may very well happen. And the weapons have been great. Marvin Harrison has been awesome. I've talked so much about what Trey McBride brings to the table. This Arizona team is game. This Arizona team, it took a field goal late from Eddie P for the Niners to beat them.
Got hurt.
It is bad. It so is. Connor is a difference maker there. And now, you know, now what you're talking about, Di Mercato and, you know, other things, and it's not the same from a running standpoint, but maybe they have figured out getting it to those other weapons. Jacoby is distributing well. What they did to first of all, what they did to the Cowboys was spectacular in my eyes. I loved it. Arizona is, quote, for real. Problem is their division is stacked. I mean, we don't have to talk best division, but normally when AFC North is normally in that conversation, and this year they clearly are not, we can start talking about NFC West as best division.
Find me more wins in any division than you can add together in the
NFC. It comes down to whether you think the Bears or the Seahawks are better, because those are the two divisions we're talking about. It's either NFC North or NFC West. So do you feel more confident about Bears or Seahawks? The first two we can say we're clearly on, but do you love the Seahawks or the Bears more there? And I would say the Seahawks have given us more reasons to puff our chest than the Bears.
The beauty of football is there's the game that's on the schedule that makes you go, beginning of the year, and then something happens, and then you get to where, who would have ever thought Patriots at Buccaneers had a shot to be a possible Super Bowl preview? Now we're probably going a little bit too excited
Squint your eyes and see it. I mean, you can squint your eyes. They'll be on the graphic all season. How about this? Those two teams will be on the graphic all season, right? Playoff picture. They'll be in the playoff picture all season.
You can't find two bigger Baker Mayfield fans outside of the city of Tampa than you and I right here.
That's for sure. Headband
huge,
all the way.
Huge game for the Buccaneers to hold off a ascending Drake May and the New England Patriots. That is that is hands down the best game in the early window coming up on Sunday, and then the Niners will get underway at 1:25. So,
by the way, did I hear maybe the most impressive stat I have heard ever? And I'm talking 85 Bears, 2000 Ravens, 2002 Bucks. The Patriots, am I right on this, Damon? And we'll find out by the end, and in the comments, please back me up. The Patriots have not allowed a 50-yard rusher this season?
Yeah, Kruger brought that up. You're like, no.
I was totally prepared for that to be 100 yards and be like, okay, cool. Right. They haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher. Great.
Right.
No. We're talking like, this is history that this league has not seen. 50 yards of rushing. 50. And they played. I mean, they started against Ashton Jeenty. I know they lost, but I mean, we're talking, there are teams on that schedule that, you know, I mean, we're talking, I mean, again, you know, that means Josh Allen didn't get it, right? Josh Allen and James Cook, neither one of them got 50.
James Cook is a guy who is going to put 50 on anybody just rolling out of bed, right? Wrong.
Achan, right? I mean, Achan, as bad as Miami is, right? Achan's got 50 when he wakes up.
Well, again, 50 is not a number that even really gets you to sit up and notice it anymore.
No.
So that is very impressive. And look, when we talk about the two names that really aren't being discussed for coach of the year, Vrabel is probably 1A and Shanahan is 1B. I mean, really.
It's so true. I cannot believe though that, I mean, Vrabel, good for Vrabel. It's one of those things where he made so much sense in Tennessee and I loved what he represented, but part of that was maybe Derrick Henry in my mind, right? Like I just like those two fit so well. The idea that he's in New England, it's almost like, was he ever anywhere else? I almost like, I can't even believe it's like the Gerard Mayo thing now just seems ridiculous in hindsight. Right.
What was that about? Seriously.
You know what the rumor is on that, by the way.
Here's the thing. You want to know why the Gerard Mayo was the hire? Because the Titans weren't.
They did not. They
screwed up by getting rid of a coach. And to think about who Vrabel is, and you've already fired Brian Callahan. Do you want to tell me you don't know what you're doing? There you go. There it is.
And the best part is firing him the week before he's about to face Vrabel. I mean, that was just like, we don't even want to see it. We don't even want to see it play out. So right. We're going to get ahead of it.
The amount of overwhelming evidence that the jury will see about the decisions we make is just so severe. We're not even going to question the witness.
Expunge. Just exactly. No cross-examination. We're just out of here.
By the way, maybe the most interesting, not cross-examination, but the thing that was said, and since we're talking about New England and glorious Patriot memories, it feels like this is the one place that we got to talk about. Tom Brady, when he talks, there's not a lot of interesting there until he starts diving into maybe some of the particulars of his own career.
Love.
Although I do like that Tom Brady under gets you football commercial that's on right now.
So good. That is so good. Yes.
Are these mugs for free? Can I?
it's set up so well. That is a tremendous job. So, you know,
yeah, I hear you, Clarence.
I don't get it. He's like, you know what I'm saying? No, we don't know what you're saying. We don't know what you're saying.
I know what you're saying.
I know, Clarence. I know. I love that.
When it comes to, you know, the single greatest history of quarterbacking of all time, the San Francisco 49ers could have cornered the market definitively with, you know, obviously Mac Jones and Brock Purdy, goes without saying, two first ballot Hall of Famers. Then you got Steve Young, some guy named Joe Montana. Could you imagine if they had actually had Tom Brady in a 49ers uniform? And this is something that Tom Brady had thought about his entire life, and he had love for the Niners until, well, I'll just let him go ahead and tell you all about it. This is Brady talking about when he fell out of love with his childhood team.
Tom, we'll change of plans. We're headed to San Francisco, Bay Area, this weekend. What's it like going back there for you? See family, obviously.
Bay Area. It always feels like home going back to the Bay. And when I grew up, we used to go to all those games at Candlestick. Now the games are down in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium. And I remember the last time I played at Levi's. I actually don't want to talk about the last time I played. That was when I was at the Bucks and we got our butts kicked against the Niners. But when I was at the Pats, one of my great memories from my playing career was 2016. It was a November day. We were at the Patriots. We flew all the way to California. It hadn't rained in California in like 9 months. From the moment we hit the ground, it rained the entire day on that Saturday, and then we played on that Sunday. And when I ran out for pregame warmups, they're like, oh, it's gonna be a little drizzle. It started literally like a downpour. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? Of all the times to come to the Bay Area, it's pouring rain. And I've got like more family than ever at these games. I had so many tickets, probably over 100 people came to this game. And we went out there and I ran out for pregame warmups, and they started chanting my name, Brady, Brady. And I thought, that is the coolest thing in the world, to go all the way across the country and to have, I think, so many people from my school at Sarah High School in San Mateo and St. Gregory's, and then all my parents' friends and my sister's friends and all my extended family came. And it was like a homecoming game. And I just remember wanting to put on the best performance. We ended up beating the Niners pretty well by a couple touchdowns. I think I threw 4 touchdowns. Julian had a great day in his hometown too. I think he caught like 8 balls for almost 100 yards, caught a touchdown pass early, great catch. James White caught a touchdown pass. Malcolm Mitchell caught a touchdown pass. Danny Amendola caught a touchdown pass. It was just a great team performance. And I remember kneeling on the ball after the game and as the final snap, and I got up thinking, man, that may go down as one of the coolest football experiences I've ever had.
Did a game like that ever make Tom Brady think about what you might look like in that red and gold?
You know, my allegiance to the Niners left when they skipped over me 6 times in the 2000 draft. So every time I wanted to play the Niners, I just wanted to make sure that the coaches who were out there at the time, you chose a goat farmer over me, and I never forgot that.
Well, if that's the case, then your any goodwill you had towards all 31 teams had to dissipate a little bit after that draft, huh?
You know, I will say they all passed over me 6 times. And in fact, the Patriots passed over me 5 times. So they were just one less than everybody else, which is, you know.
I mean, I'll say
so this. Good.
I'll say this. Of all those other teams, though, that he fell out of, he didn't grow up rooting for any of them other than the Niners. Not one of them. And that, you want to, is that the ultimate one that got away right there? Seriously.
Well, you would have to say anyone who really had a chance, Damon, and it's tough to say. I mean, I guess Giselle could be saying that right now more than the Niners, perhaps, you know, and one day, and obviously she's one that got away for him as well. But
Isn't your judo instructor? I think she's
right. It's good. No, look, she's good forever regardless. But when it comes to really saying at the end of the day, like, I had that, there's certainly, you know how you fall and you know how your ex on social media, there's a lot of the FOMO in regards to that. I mean, think about these two, right? I mean, just think about, like, for both of them, I don't know who loses more there, but that's a rough follow for the rest of your life, right? Following Giselle, knowing that whatever she's doing, you could have been right there side by side, and seeing what Tom Brady's doing, imagining that you could be side by side. That's, that's rough. But I go back to that game. Good memory. You know, we always marvel at McVay being able to pick plays out from games from 6 and 7 years ago. Brady said 4 touchdown passes. He was right. He said 8 catches for Edelman. He was right. I got the box score right here. He said Malcolm Mitchell touchdown. He was right. So all of that happened exactly as he remembered it on that day. And the final score, he said 2 touchdowns. The final score was 30-17. So good for Brady, 2016 in the Bay. He remembers that pretty well.
Recall that guys have.
And they do, but I mean, quarterback, it doesn't surprise me with quarterbacks. You might have to know going into a game. And then, and think about this, Damon, I've always said the one hit wonder thing, like, oh, that guy's only a one hit wonder. Like think about Brady, any game he won in the NFL is a hit. Any game that you win in the NFL, like compared to anyone else in the world, is that like, wouldn't you remember everything about the game you played in the NFL? Like any win you had in the NFL, you wouldn't you remember? Yeah, like
in a short amount of time, yes. But Brady's been, I mean, yeah, 20 plus years in, the recall's impressive. Even though that came later in his career, it's still amazing recall. It really, really is. By the way, did you feel the subtle dig at Levi Stadium right there?
Oh, for sure I did. I love that. And you know you caught that. And it's always tough for me because I know you hate Levi Stadium. My son's name is Levi, and so I want it to be this spectacular place. And just knowing that it's not is just painful.
The stadium was not named biblically, like I'm guessing your son was.
Exactly. Levi. No, exactly. No, not at all.
It was about blue jeans.
Correct.
Okay. One last thing that I wanted to get into, and then anything else you feel we needed to put on the table.
Yes, maybe I like it.
Have you got a just saying Nick Saban today? Or are you just
so saying I do the just say, yeah. If you want, let's go just saying Nick Saban. So, but wait, get yours
in
first.
In a minute. What the last thing that I need to put on the table today, in just a boy, interesting week around football. We all know that however it's going to end for Antonio Brown, it ain't going to be good. Right? Like we know that. That was made obvious to anyone who's been paying attention. Like this doesn't end well. The only thing we are, how bad is it going to get? Well, we are really pushing the envelope right here because the 37-year-old Antonio Brown was back in South Florida to stand trial for a shooting outside of a celebrity boxing event earlier this year. He had been so nervous about this that he actually left the country. He was in Saudi Arabia. He got extradited from Dubai to Miami after being taken into custody. He was taken into custody then at Newark Airport in New Jersey. Brown will be held in the Miami-Dade Department of Corrections, and he will be charged with 1 count of attempted second-degree murder with a deadly weapon. Brown allegedly snagged a gun from a security guard and shot at a man. The warrant cites several witnesses on the scene who say that Brown indeed pulled the trigger himself. Okay. Well, this is worse than spending a little bit too much time in the cryo chamber and burning your feet like he did for the Raiders. Antonio Brown needs, he needs a lot of help. He needs a lot of help, and he might be beyond help. I don't know if this is CTE or just mega asshole or just total, just he's that bad of a guy. He might be.
It also in many ways shows you the power of the NFL, the insulation of the NFL. And what I mean by that is this, we didn't know, like it's as bad as Antonio Brown may have been while in the league, the stories that came up, none of it was at this level. So outside of the rules, the regulations, and the oversight and the QC quality control that the league has when you're in it, right? The protection that the league provides for you, the opportunities the league gives for you to not step in your own shit. And then outside of it, what can happen, right? This is who you are with the league. This is who you are when you're with even look, you can say what you want about the Raiders. They're one of 32 organizations that's going to take care of you. And when you're outside of that, good luck to you. If you're willing to, because guess what? George Pickens, you're an asshole in Pittsburgh. We'll take care of you in Dallas, right? Like, we'll figure it out. How many guys, like, we'll figure it out. You got talent, we'll figure it out. And guess what? If you ask Tom Brady, guys that he probably wishes he had more time with, Antonio Brown's on the list. Tom Brady enjoyed throwing the ball to Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown walked away from that. Right. At a time in his career when he absolutely needed and missed having a quarterback at that level. And yet he fucked that up. Antonio Brown, this is just a lesson to what it is to screw up your opportunity in this league and walk away from it. This is what can happen. I mean, Antonio Brown in so many ways, whatever he's done outside of the league, we can say he was meant to be on this planet to play football. He's exceptional at that.
For a minute there, like at the height of his powers with the Steelers, find me a better player.
There isn't. There are seasons. By the way, his name still comes up every Sunday. Do you know that Antonio Brown's name comes up every Sunday because there is a stat every week that is X receiver did this the first since, tracking to be the best since, and Antonio Brown's on the list. When you talk about seasons, games, stretches of games in this league in which a player accrued statistics, Antonio Brown was at a historic pace within his career. And still, there are pieces of Antonio Brown, I promise you, that are in the Hall of Fame. He has done things in this league. I remember the walk-off he had against the Ravens on Christmas Day years ago. But I mean, Antonio, and of course, and
I remember is at what MetLife Stadium when he's going full on end of the Paul Newman Slapshot. He's getting naked at the end of Slapshot. He's halfway naked in the end zone, running off double burden the entire, like, dude.
But what I'll remember most, and you mentioned it, and I didn't, you know, we don't have to, I mean, brain injuries are tough to assume, right? But the Vontaze Burfict hit.
Oh, yeah. Might have scrambled the bacon.
Many people go back to that. He had many years in the league after that, but that was the height of his Steelers career. That hit. You know, that hit ended at the time, the only chance that the Bengals had at winning a playoff. They could never win for Marvin Lewis. That was one where they had the lead, and that hit from Burfict changed the whole game there, those 15 yards. But that hit, as important as it was in the game and as terrified as the Bengals were for what happened, something happened to Antonio Brown that day. That's the theory around it. That hit I'll never forget. That's one of those devastating hits where you just go, that's
right. But it's so rare that one moment of on-field violence then turns you into a mega asshole who randomly pulls triggers. You know, I mean, like, come on, man. It's not good. Antonio Brown, we knew it wasn't going to be good.
No,
but thank you for proving us right once again. This is from Dunn98, who says, Damon, I just came here to say that Larry needs to shut up about the Mac versus Purdy crap till Mac wins some playoff games. Hey, thank you for the super. Go complain to Larry. If you got a complaint for Larry, give it to Larry on Larry's channel. So we got into it a little bit today, just about, you know, he wanted to talk about the quarterback controversy. To me, there is no quarterback controversy. The 49ers are sitting in a quarterbacking level of nirvana that is rarely found. You know, you want to interpret what they have as a problem because it's the old saying, when you got two quarterbacks, it means you really don't have one. No, that's not what's going on here. You cannot apply that saying to this situation. This is a great situation for the 49ers to be in, and there can't be a controversy unless you have an option between two things. Right now, your quarterbacking options are simple. Mac Jones, Adrian Martinez. Who are you going with? Mac Jones. I'm going to go with him. And then until Brock is ready to make it through a week of practice without the word limited next to it, I don't want to hear a word. There's no controversy going on. There isn't one in the quarterback room. I don't think there's one in the mind of the head coach. I don't think there's one in the locker room. And if there is one amongst Dan Orlovsky or a certain group of the fan base, well, look, the first second a certain percentage of this fan base was ever going to get to run Brock Purdy out of town, they were going to do it anyway.
So, the term I use here, and you've hit it perfectly, I said it to you before, quarterback controversy or quarterback competency. And that's what the Niners have. They have quarterback competency. They've got two good options here.
Right. People are trying to speak a good situation into a bad one because all anyone sees is negativity. This is not the way to look at that.
Nope. Nope. Good spot to be in. Good spot to be in. And Mac Jones. And look, the only thing I'll say is eventually the pumpkin, you know, eventually the chalice turns back into the pumpkin. And that's, you know, Mac Jones is in the window right now where you may not get another spectacular performance. We've said it. If you can float me for four games, you've done your job as a backup quarterback. And we're now in the twilight of that. And an opponent that we know is incredibly significant. I hate that Brock played the Jacksonville game. We've discussed that. It happened. And so you needed Mac for more games now. You're going to need Mac for this one. Mac's going to have to sweep the Rams if that's what you're going to do to beat them twice. Fine. Brock Purdy is on the horizon here for you, and that's a good thing.
By the way, I got to thank Quesadilla Thrilla 71, who said there should be a spicy version of the Damon Bruce at Ice. It should have like all sorts of hot sauce and jalapenos on it for when I turn into spicy Damon, evil Damon here.
That's good.
Breaking case, spicy Damon. tries to Hulk it out. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate you, Quesadilla Thriller. And Dunn again coming in with another sprinkle for the ganja jar, saying, right, if he beats Purdy healthy, it's a fair game. And it's funny, too. We're talking about this, and Kruger, I think, has actually handicapped the situation as well as anyone. And then he was getting all confused about what it is. I think Mac Jones is a better quarterback over an injured Brock Purdy. But the minute it's no longer injured Brock Purdy, I think he is the better, more mobile quarterback, which in this team, as it's currently built, I think gives them a wrinkle that they need. So I think you go back to Brock when you can. The fact that you're not running him back out there means shit's going great with Mac. It's just amazing. It's, you know, nobody watched Joe Flacco play really well for Cincinnati and then said, is it time to talk about Joe Burrow?
No, you know, no. And again, Cincinnati loses that game with Joe Burrow, quarterback. Also, they gave that game away on defense, right, against the Bears. Joe Flacco should have been talked about more as the performance of the weekend. Joe Flacco was that good and won the game, put his team on top in a game they were trailing and said, there you go. See you later. I've done my job. And the defense shit the bed yet again.
Before we go to just saying, which old man do you think would have more wins left in his coaching career at any level, Bill Belichick or Nick Saban?
So Damon, this is the crux of exactly what my just saying was going to be. So Shaq was asked about it or brought Nick up and basically said, what if LSU went back to Nick Saban? And remember this, Nick Saban won a national championship for LSU. 2003, I believe.
Million years ago, right?
Yeah, but it happened. Oklahoma, they beat them. And I think it was a year that USC also got votes, right? It was back when you split the vote, like the AP, right, had USC, whatever, who gives a shit. USC won. Yeah, LSU won the game of 1-2. So he wins that, and then LSU eventually moves on. And of course, what Nick does at Alabama is unprecedented. And so for always, I've said, nobody has shit on LSU more than Saban. Like Saban, ultimately, like, he is a reminder. Not only did he smash them most seasons in the head-to-head, it was always a reminder of what you could have been. And Les Miles had good seasons, and Les Miles won a championship. But when they went up against each other that year of Game of the Century.
You know, Ed Orgeron.
Correct. Miles lost the head-to-head in the championship game, and it was just, there were so many other Alabama wins. They beat Leonard Fournette. I mean, they beat great players for LSU over the years. And so this rumor, oh my God, get Nick back. Yes, it's adorable. It's cute. And what I thought is, no. It's not about Saban going to LSU. Could you imagine if Saban replaced Belichick at North Carolina? Because the idea of Nick Saban, who's doing nothing based on the results that Belichick had, it's that simple thing. If I'm not seeing you do it in a terrible way, I'm assuming that you're doing it the way I last saw you do it, which is what UNC's thinking about Belichick, right? We saw what you did in New England. We saw what you did there, and you're going to bring it in. You're going to do the exact same thing here at UNC, and instead it's a totally different game, and right now it looks awful. And with Saban, you're thinking the last thing you saw was what you did at Alabama. You can come in and do the same thing in North Carolina, and while you're just talking to Pat McAfee on Saturdays, we get to keep thinking that.
What if he showed up like a 28-year-old girlfriend, just to really twist the knife in Belichick's back, right? Just to really, really make it hurt. So here's my just saying. I don't think either guy has got the temperament to deal with modern college kids. I don't think either Saban or Belichick really is going to find a level of success collegiately. Again, it's changed that much. If you're the New York Jets, if you're the New York Jets, why not hire them both? Say, guess what? You guys can determine who's head coach of offense, but the two of you are like best buddies. Do you want to walk out hand in hand? The two of you would have instantly more credibility than the entirety of the New York Jets franchise since the day Joe Namath stopped playing for them. So, you know, Bill, we will make this right after it didn't go right with Bill Belichick, the Bill Parcells thing with you being the
general. Imagine that press conference redone, right? Imagine you could just take the end of what he said at his last press conference and now start it with this one. If he showed up again in that building with that backdrop behind him, Belichick with the Jets backdrop would be worth it alone. just for him to just show up and say, hi, I'm back, would be amazing.
There was an old movie where it was like Jack Lemmon and James Robard who played, or maybe it wasn't James Robard, but anyways, it was two old presidents come together for like a big great American road trip. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican, but they have to spend so much time in a car. By the end of it, they're friends and they save America. That's what this would be. It would be the NFL coaching equivalent of Space Cowboys, where they sent all those old dudes into outer space.
Right. Love.
Give it to me.
Love. Love. I love that. And you know what's going to stop that? I'm going to tell you right now, you know the example that's going to stop that in its tracks? Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly in Vegas.
Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly. I was just about to say that. I mean, why not fire them both today? Because you're going to do it at the end of the year. Why not do at the end of the year what you should be doing today?
Quick swap.
It's already over for the Pete Carroll Raider era.
Oh, man.
It's rough. All right. Let's see. You know what I forgot to do again today? I forgot to write down my birthdays.
Oh, what do we got? Well, let's think. Let me think. All right. November 9. Do I have any that are interesting today? Also, I'm thinking personally. November 11th. So just next week, my brother, Aaron, the great Aaron Batesh, he's an 11-11 birthday on Veterans Day. So we love Aaron Batesh, as we call him back in the day when you knew him with dreadlocks. Yeah.
But, yes. By the way, Lord.
Yes.
She's 29 years old, everybody. Lord is 29 years old. By the way, that's a lot of success for just 29, right?
I remember when the Royals were in the World Series and won the World Series, and they had the Lord of the Royals. That was a great run. Yeah, I like that.
That was literally happening, I think, when it was in 2014. It was Giants and Royals. They stopped playing Royals here in San Francisco.
Awesome. Awesome.
Like one of the stations did that. Like Alice is like, we're no longer playing freaking Royal by Lord. Adam Devine is 42 years old. He's pretty funny, man. I like him in a lot of things. Let's see what else we got today. Birthday wise. No, that's not important. That's not famous enough. You don't get a mention. Sorry. That's it. Not a big day for birthday.
Okay. That's all right. It's okay. Happy.
Is Joni Mitchell still with us?
Let's double check that.
I think Joni's still alive. You Google
and yes, 82 years alive.
Joni, get it done.
Happy.
All right. Today, in 1665, it was a big day in the newspaper world. The first edition of the London Gazette was printed. At the time, it was called the Oxford Gazette. You can't find two more hoity-toity names than London or Oxford. So there you go. Congratulations.
By the way, newspapers, congratulations. That's a hell of a run. As much as you may be out of it now, that's a nice run from 1665. You were incredibly relevant in 1965. So congratulations.
What from 1665 sold one of anything today?
Think about it. I mean, I can find, there's an LA Times at my dad's driveway right now. So that is still happening 2025.
I would hope that somewhere in your dad's driveway back in Philadelphia right now, there is a former wide receiver doing sit-ups. Every Eagles fan, there is a TO doing sit-ups at the end of the driveway.
I love that.
Today in 1874, the very first cartoon that ever depicted the elephant as the symbol of the Republican Party, that happened today. Thomas Nast, that name is in Condé Nast. He would become a huge publisher. He is also, I told you that to tell you this, not only did he invent the whole Republicans are represented by the elephant in political cartoons, he also is credited with being the first to draw what we think of the modern version of Santa Claus is.
That's impressive, which Coca-Cola likes to take credit for also.
They go with the polar bear thing, you know, the Coca-Cola and the Santa Claus thing. But yeah, I mean, look, who came up with a modern version of Santa Claus? Now you know. Today, in 1885, the Canadian Pacific Railway was completed. That officially connected the Atlantic and Pacific coasts. And I'm sure when somebody pulled up for that first time in that Canadian train station, they were greeted with a, hey, guy. How you doing, guy?
That train's running a boat on time. It's great.
Today in 1908, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid were reportedly killed in San Vicente, Bolivia. Raw with no trivia, like cocaine straight from Bolivia. There it is. Today, you know, we officially have lost Paul Newman and Robert Redford. Well, today's the day their characters there went down for real. Today in 1932, the very first broadcast of Buck Rogers in the 25th century happened on CBS radio. Buck Rogers would, of course, become a TV show from our childhood. And my favorite, any Buck Rogers anything, was the Daffy Duck take when he became Duck Dodgers.
Yes, yes. Give me that, please. Yeah, for those that know it in the chat, please, please remind us and please tell us that you do remember that, because that is the greatest rendition.
Marvin the Martian.
Martian, yep.
My plutonium.
Great. Love every bit of that.
Today in 1962, he lost the governor's election in California, and Richard Nixon gave what he called would be his last ever press conference, where he famously told reporters, "You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore." 6 years later, he would be elected president. So apparently that was a premature final press conference of all time.
That's like Nick Saban in Miami. I will not be the head coach at Alabama.
You will not see me in Tuscaloosa the very next day. He's like,
yeah, I got some news.
How you doing? Good to see you, Tuscaloosa. Did you lose weight? Today in 1975, the new original Wonder Woman TV aired. It was a test for the series, and they had tried this in 74 with Kathy Lee Crosby, who became Kathy Lee Gifford. Right? So they tried her. The secret to success this time around with Wonder Woman, Linda Carter and Linda Carter's breasts. They really pushed Wonder Woman over the top. First of all, Linda Carter was gorgeous. Linda Carter was, she was a massive moment in the development of my own libido. Oh my God.
Yes.
I remember that, you know, the very first time you have one of those. So I dreamed that Wonder Woman tied me up with a lasso, and I really liked it.
And you're just thinking, your parents start to wonder, right? Like, they're paying attention. What are you watching? And it's like Wonder Woman sounds wholesome, right? Like, that there's nothing salacious there
you
going on.
You do that spin, and you're like, whoa, hey.
And then your dad's in there like, we're in here, honey. We're fine. We're fine. We're in here. We'll be there soon.
I'm combing my hair. Leave me alone. Okay. San Bruno Mike says uranium Q36 explosive space modulator.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you
very, very much. Sam, there's not a lot of moments in our lives where I'm going to tell you the news story and you're going to be able to tell me exactly where you were when you heard it. This is one of them. This was a big one. If we really had to talk about the 20 biggest shocking moments of news in our lives, I think this is in the top 10. There are a few things that I can tell you exactly where I was when the Challenger exploded, 9/11, Magic Johnson's got AIDS.
Oh,
today in 1991, Magic Johnson announced that he was infected with HIV. I remember coming off the field of football practice in high school and my mom picking me up in a really big blue Oldsmobile Toronado. And my mom, who has never started a conversation with me where it's about sports, right? Literally, I remember I'm walking to the car, my mom opening the car door, standing up and over the roof of the car telling me Magic Johnson has HIV. Hi. How are you, Mom? What?
Not to mention what that meant in your brain at that time from what you were taught at school. That
the
was
one thing we all knew is that Magic Johnson was going to be dead of AIDS by the time the car got home.
Dead. Not in the hospital. Dead.
He would be dead by tonight. It's a death sentence. Everyone who ever touched him, shook his hand, might have played with him.
You think COVID's bad about the amount of days you got to stay home and wonder about who you were with and 15 feet of distance? I mean, HIV was at that peak level. I mean, it was going to be the end of you back then. And yet, if I rub my eyes, I promise you, I was at the parade on Monday. You know, the first person I saw on the first bus celebrating the Dodgers championship, waving his hand.
Healthy as an ox, right? Magic Johnson.
Sipping on the elixir, Magic Johnson. And then later on Wednesday was also at the Laker game celebrating that Dodgers championship yet again. Good for you, Magic Johnson. I saw him coming out of the Michigan State USC game earlier this season with Cookie, looking great. Amazing. And what I remember most about that actually is Pat O'Brien.
Was dead. We thought Cookie was going to die.
For sure. Oh, done. If not already, right? Like, we're going to find out later that, oh, and we've also found Cookie's body, right? Like, that was, right. Yeah, for sure. So I remember Pat O'Brien, who I would work with many years later, and you know Pat as well, Damon. Pat O'Brien welcomed everyone to that press conference. Pat O'Brien was, we're here today with Magic Johnson. He's got an announcement. I mean, that was unbelievable.
Where were you? I know where you were.
1,000%. I was in the bedroom at my parents' home on Woodlake in Woodland Hills. I was in the bedroom. And I remember I had a TV VCR combo, which I was very proud of. Very proud of that. And I watched that right there on that. And I remember being scared. I mean, I was scared. I mean, for years, I was scared of having sex for a long time. Like, that was informative years for me when we were learning about that. And so, and then the Magic thing drove it home even more. Like, well, clearly that's what he's doing. And oh my God, you just couldn't put it, you know what, frankly, and I hate to tie it to another horrible tragedy, but it's one of those, when you're talking about things that you just think are sort of not real. And remember this, well before social media. So when a story came out, it was real. There wasn't a lot of like, oh, it's a fake Twitter account, right? When news came out, it was definitively real.
This was a world where news was accepted as, there is more than a kernel of truth, no matter where we're getting this from, but it's coming from a news source. And in 1991, that still meant something.
It again, The Onion maybe existed back then, that you'd have like fake funny headlines, but that, like, there wasn't a cumulative collective of potentially fake news anywhere. So it was real. It definitively happened. And so at that point, and what I would tie it to is that Super Bowl Sunday before the Super Bowl, when we heard Kobe Bryant and a helicopter, immediately you're convinced it's just not real. You're just convinced it's not real. And what I mean to tie them together is, at the height of who they were at the time, it was impossible to believe.
I remember that day totally too. I was in Austin, Texas. I had just seen Trey Anastasio with my buddy Ben Sabrin at Austin City Limits. I was flying back to San Francisco, and on the way to the airport, the news of Kobe Bryant's helicopter going down started to trickle out. And unlike in 1991, the very first thing you were was skeptical about that. There's no way. That can't be true. There's no way this is right. It can't be. By the time I was at the gate, gone through security, it had been confirmed. And I remember that day in the airport, I spoke to more total strangers about that than I've spoken to total strangers about any subject in an airport ever. I mean, it brought every single dude who you made eye contact with just gave you the, can you believe it look? And you knew they knew too. You didn't, you know, they weren't, can you believe it about this damn airline? No. Everything was Kobe that day.
I mean, it takes a lot to sort of wipe the Super Bowl out of, you know, our focus. And right. Because again, you're in a Super Bowl city. I was there in Miami that Monday of the Super Bowl. You know, it's a week. It's basically a convention for people that are in sports entertainment. And that Monday is a big kicking it off. Here's what we got. These are the two teams. And let's talk about it. And it was dedicated in a football city for a football game that's going to be happening 6 days later. Nobody said the three letters NFL that Monday.
It didn't matter. I mean, you know, sports are one thing. Then you get a life and death situation. And again, we all thought that Magic would be dead by the time his press conference ended. There was so much misunderstanding. So much misunderstanding. Let's see. Our final super of the day comes from SGA Sports Talk, who's been a member now for 13 months. Thank you. Hi, Damon and Sammy. I'm a big fan of you two. I'm currently at 491 subs, eight away from 500. You two keep the show entertaining every single day.
Love that.
Go over and give SGA Sports Talk a sub. Let's get him to 500 before this day comes to an end. And this show has officially come to an end. We want to thank everyone for being here. Hit like and subscribe on your way out, not only here on Damon Bruce Plus, but over at Thinking Out Loud with Siciliano and Sam. Please hit notify. My goodness, I'm, you know, 15 minutes away from making a studio for the live watch stream that we will have for 49ers and Rams this Sunday. So I hope you can join me then. And very interesting week, a fun week indeed. Great.
We didn't even mention Monday Night Football, Packers and Eagles. That's going to be a fun one too.
It's a monster. It's great. There's a monster
in Green Bay. It's great.
In Green Bay. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so very, very much for tuning in. Sammy, thanks as always. What's going on in the world of the Los Angeles Kings?
Big road trip coming up, but it was actually a week of milestones, Damon. Drew Doughty passed Rob Blake. Most goals ever by a defenseman in Kings history. Doughty passes Rob Blake, the Hall of Famer.
So, well,
so 160. So, yeah, guess. You want to guess? You want to guess?
Well, you already kind of gave it. I was going to come in under 200.
Okay, there you go.
Now you're in like Chris Chelios territory.
Yeah, exactly. So 162 is the number. And then, by the way, just in the NHL world, I mean, we got to credit the grade eight Alex Ovechkin hits number 900 this week. I mean, just that's no one in that club. 900 is not like,
I'm not going to position myself as some expert on what's coming or the harbinger of. I will say this, though. Macklin Celebrini can play. Not can play well for a number one overall pick. He can play like maybe historically well for a guy his age at this point in his career. There's something happening in Macklin Celebrini.
Connor McDavid levels of importance.
That's almost a bridge too far, right? Like that, because now you're saying he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, because McDavid, I think, already is right now.
I agree. You could stop his career right now and he would be, but Macklin Celebrini is showing that kind of production on a team that has much less around him.
It's legit. That kid can skate. That kid can shoot. He's got it. Whatever it is, he's got it. Whatever it is, Samboni's got it. Whatever it is, thanks for coming here to try to find it. Look at it this way. If we don't got it, we'll just pretend we do. We'll make it up as we go along.
We're getting you pretty close.
Thank you very, very much for tuning in. And please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone.